Good afternoon. So last time, we started talking about Rust as our example of kind of a programming language level attempt to solve the problem of why can we write programs that have use after free bugs. And we mentioned kind of this motivational thing that we were aiming for, and I probably should have this here, zero overhead. Right, that's the probably one of the big reasons people like using C or C++. Another reason is, of course, that there's lots of C and C++ compatible libraries, but a big reason is that if for things you want to do that need to be efficient, you know, in terms of space or time, you know, C and C++ let you kind of get the low-level access to not have extra stuff going on. That is much trickier to do in a language like Python or Java, where kind of our normal things have a lot of overhead, things being checked that, you know, maybe we could omit, and extra space being used for bookkeeping. And that's kind of the big attraction, and Rust is trying to occupy that niche, but support better memory safety. And the biggest challenge there is that one of the things that isn't quote-unquote zero overhead is garbage collection. At least most people don't think it's zero overhead. Some people in garbage collection research might disagree. But so Rust wants to solve the use after free problem without doing kind of traditional garbage collection strategies. And to do this, we need to track, like, who can be using an object. And we talked about kind of the simplest idea, which is kind of the basis of kind of what the policies that Rust is going to enforce at the compiler level, which is that we say that objects have a single owner, and you can give away the ownership, and only the owner is allowed to access the object. We're going to say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't let you do very much. So we're going to have a fix for that, but we're still going to like be building on this principle. Because this rule like clearly prevents a use after free problem as long as we enforce that, you know, freeing the object gives away ownership. Because if we enforce that you don't access something you don't own and you give it away to free it, and you can't possibly own something that someone else thinks they own, then there's no way you can have use after free. The problem is that there's code you can't write under these principles that you probably want to write. In fact, a whole lot of code. So we're going to get something where we're going to extend these principles to add a few extra rules that will make things more complicated, but still be safe, but allow us to write more code we want to write. We're going to still have some holes where we're not going to be able to kind of implement things that we might want to implement kind of in C or C++ or Java. And we were looking at this exercise, which when I pointed out last time, I didn't emphasize that if we're doing like something like this, so the notion is that we're transferring ownership of P to foo, and then transferring it back. So we're doing this pattern where we only move values between different owners, like which of these are consistent with that. And we have giving away ownership to free the object. That's fine, right? We're still following the single owner rule. And here, where we're giving away ownership to reallocate the object and modify it, that's fine. And here, same thing, just not reallocating it. Here, this is suspect, because if I call foo multiple times, I'm gonna have two people who think they own global via different pointers to it. And that's the sort of thing that Rust is going to try to prevent kind of at the compiler level. The compiler is going to say, you can't do this because this violates our rules about transferring ownership, that if you transfer ownership of the global, then the global has to be unusable after that. And it clearly, you know, it doesn't seem to be, unless we somehow enforce that, like, foo is only called once and no one else uses global. But yeah, the single owner rule is really limiting. And the biggest thing is that I showed you code with references before in Rust. The single owner rule basically says you can't make references. Because now if I make a reference to this vector X, now I have two things that think they own it. So if I ever use V again, it follows that X shouldn't be usable, because we're only supposed to have one owner, and that owner is either V or X. It's owned through V or through X. You know, those are separate references that we need to track separately. So this violates the rules I showed you, and boy, that basically means we can't use references at all. The only way we could use references is if we say, making X moves the vector away, but if it moves it away, what does X point to? It's a problem. So we need to extend this rule to be more flexible to even accommodate the idea of references to objects. And so we're going to add kind of two changes to this rule to make this more practical. So one change is we're going to add something we'll call borrowing that will kind of look at that pattern we saw of moving an object to a function and moving it back, and we'll pretend that when we're making a reference that we're doing that. We'll do the bookkeeping as if, you know, when I pass a reference to a function, it's as if I'm moving it into that reference and then moving it back when we're done. But what's going on in memory is our zero overhead idea. I'm just passing a pointer. And we'll have our compiler track that kind of moving for bookkeeping purposes, but really taking a reference. And that's how we'll make references work. That when we take a reference, we'll account for it like we move the object away and then move it back later. But we won't implement it that way. We'll implement it with what we do in natural C or C++ code of passing a pointer. The other thing we kind of want is that we probably want to be able to have multiple pointers to the same thing. And with just the borrowing I talked about, we couldn't do that because we're still trying to enforce single owner. And if we just allow multiple pointers willy-nilly, we have this problem that we can't really make it safe to change objects. I'll give you a specific example of why, but kind of the intuition you want to have is when we change objects, we might reallocate memory. And that's where we can get into trouble. I'll give you a specific example with a dynamic array, an array list, basically, that I think will illustrate that well. So the rule we're going to make is that we'll still only allow one entity to write to an object, but we'll allow multiple readers. So we'll end up sort of extending our idea that we don't need a single owner for the purposes of a single active owner for the purposes of reading, but we will need it for writing. So this gives us kind of our new versions of the rules. And we'll start with the notion of borrowing, that we're going to say that even though we have a single owner, the owner can let people borrow the object temporarily and become the effective owner. And this is how we're going to implement our reference idea. So here I have a sum function. And previously, I wrote a version where we move the vector into the function. And we needed to move it back to the normal code. this in the other order. And that was the trick we used to have the single owner rule be satisfied. That while the function was running, we gave away ownership of it to the function by just moving it there, and then we moved it back when it returned. So we can basically have the compiler do the bookkeeping as if that's what we wrote, but instead we pass a reference. But the compiler is going to bookkeep this as if, while this function is running, we've given away ownership. We've let it be borrowed by the function, the vector. And so this is the key idea we're going to use to kind of fit track what happens to references in a way where we're not going to run into unsafety. And this rule is going to prevent kind of dangling pointers. So kind of a classic thing we can do in C is we can write code that gives away a pointer to something and has it go away. And how is this rule going to prevent that? Well, we know that we have to have, for making a reference, we have to know how long is it around and when are we going to borrow it, get it back from it being borrowed. Right? If we're not giving it away, and with a reference we aren't, we're just temporarily letting someone borrow it, we have to know when it comes back. And that's not possible in this case. So if I have this function here, and I try to compile it, I get this error from Rust. And it says, missing lifetime specifier. So what it's telling me here is, well, this reference, you need to tell me how long is this reference valid. So normally, when we read Rust code, we don't actually specify explicitly how long the reference is valid. Instead, the compiler infers this. But in this case, it's saying, gosh, I don't see from this code how long that thing you return is supposed to be a usable reference, because I don't know what it comes from. So I can fix that and specify an explicit lifetime. I've, in this case, specified static, meaning it's valid forever, I promise. Compiler, yeah. And if I try to compile this, it says, no, it's not. I checked. I know where that value comes from. It's local to the function. You can't do that. It's not valid forever. Because it can knows where it comes from, it can verify, no, it's not valid for a useful amount of time. And even when we don't explicitly specify a lifetime like this, the compiler is going to try to infer one and make the code work under that restriction. So in this case, I specify the lifetime of it's valid forever, which, you know, it clearly would not be. Anyway, so another way we can have nice dangling pointers in use after free and C is we can stash a pointer in some global variable and just leave it around for a while. So what happens if I try to do this in Rust? Well, the compiler complains, hey, this reference here, it doesn't last forever, and it needs to last forever to go in that global variable. So you can't do that. And actually, kind of a problem with this design that Rust has chosen is that it's actually really hard to use global variables. And that's only the because the main error Rust gives here actually is saying that, hey, you know that mutable static thing, that global variable you defined? You can't use that without writing unsafe. You just can't use it. And this is a compromise that they made by having something like this single owner with borrowing rule. That there's no way of making global variables make sense with that rule. Or just normal global variables. There are ways of achieving the effects of global variables, but you have to do extra steps. And the main issue is one that I'll touch on a bit later that we're not going to focus our time on because not everyone has taken CS02, which is with multiple threads. That it's really that we need to do extra work to have the compiler be convinced that our global variable would be safe if we have multiple threads accessing it. And so their solution is, yeah, there's this global variable thing, but if you want to use it, you have to use the unsafe keyword because our safety rules don't enforce the right things for using that. These mutable global variables. I can have a constant, but that's not super useful. So questions about our dangling pointer examples? So, as showed so far, we showed borrowing to kind of read a value, we can borrow to write a value. So here I have passed a mutable reference to a vector, and I modify that vector in place. That makes sense. And I mentioned that like we're going to track a lifetime, so this is kind of effectively, we're creating a reference and immediately invalidating the reference after that. And this is the point in time in which that borrowed value is being borrowed. And therefore, I can't use vector here. Vector here, because it's being borrowed. And we'll have some examples showing that that's something the compiler is going to enforce later. So the compiler is kind of thinking of this shorthand and saying, okay, since we made this mutable reference, that means vector is out of commission until that reference goes away. So it's going to check for overlap with all the other borrowers. What is the inferred lifetime? So there's usually not an explicit way of writing it, but it's based on, you know, typically when the reference is used. We'll have some examples that I think will kind of show the kind of things the compiler infers, but this is kind of a case where we're relying on the compiler doing program analysis to try to figure out when is this reference no longer used. Usually it's kind of the straightforward thing of, you know, if this is the last use of it, that should be the end. That's the end of the lifetime it needs to have. And we just need to make sure that's consistent with what it's being borrowed from. Does that make sense? Okay, other questions? So, with this idea here, what is the lifetime of P, which is borrowed from X? So clearly, the original owner is the owner at 1. Is it? So who thinks it's borrowed at 2? Not borrowed at 2? Okay. No clue? No clue. Okay, so we have a reference here that's valid, and we need to say that it's borrowed there because we need to worry about making sure that we don't have someone move where X is. So it has to be borrowed here. And sort of an intuition is need to make sure X doesn't move, so the reference is still valid. Yeah.
So basically, in this case, we're like transferring the ownership of the reference of X to P, and then the lifetime of P is going to be until we transfer that ownership back to X.
And the lifetime of P isn't, yeah, until we transfer the ownership back, and this is going to be done by the compiler's bookkeeping, usually not by us explicitly.
And we can't use X while P is referencing it.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, question.
Is there a way to read from X when P is borrowing, or do you not read it right?
Is there a way to read from X? That should be fine because of our borrowing rules, right? We can have one writer, but... Oh, sorry, we can only have one mutable... No, I guess that should not be fine, sorry. Okay. There's a mutable borrow, it should not be fine. Because we have to worry about what if... Yeah, by default, what if X changes while it's reading it? So for an int, it doesn't make sense that that's a problem, but if we like think of a vector, you have to think of what if the vector gets reallocated while we're reading it? That would be really bad. That would be a use after free bug that we need to avoid. So yeah, while it's being written, we can only have one user. And this mutable of X is kind of standing for it being written. Yeah?
Could we have like a read borrow? Like, we borrow it, but we're only going to read from
Can we borrow it if only we're going to read? Yes. And if I wrote no mute here and didn't try to write to it, but just try to like print it,
right,
that would be a borrowing only for read. And we can absolutely do that. We saw an example of this here. My sum is only reading the value, or not sorry, here, sorry. We saw an example of this here. Here, my sum is only reading the value, so it's only borrowed for read. So we don't actually, so we could actually have something else also reading it. And I'll have examples that illustrate that more explicitly later. Okay. So for B, it has to be borrowed, and yeah, the thing we need to think of is that, you know, when we make a reference to something, we need to make sure it doesn't change from under us to like move around, or if we're like getting a reference to like part of an element of a vector, we need to make sure that it doesn't get reallocated, things like that. How about line 3? Who thinks that its owner is the original? Thinks it's the new point, new reference is the current, is being borrowed. Okay, so most people say B. That's probably the most straightforward. We're not allowed to modify it unless we're the current borrower or user. How about on line 4? Who thinks the owner is the original? Thinks it's still being borrowed? No clue? Okay, so you have more of a mix here. And because of our rule that you can't read something while it's being modified, it has to be the original. And what's happening here is that the compiler is going to do the analysis and say, okay, P isn't used anymore, therefore this is okay. And it's kind of going to act as if the way I wrote this code is I added kind of an explicit scope for P to say P goes away after we're done using it. Even though I'm not going to write that explicitly, the compiler is going to infer that to make this work. And say that's the end of the lifetime of the reference P. And you could see that you could imagine making a version of Rust where you have to do all of that explicitly, but it's a lot easier for a lot of practical code if the compiler does this relatively simple transformation of just saying, look for the last use of a reference and make the reference not need to be borrowed after that. And so getting to our sort of idea here. So here I have a vector of vectors. And yeah. So what compile errors do we expect here? We have some borrowing, we have some problems here, but we're violating the rules on when we can safely borrow things. And another question is, are any of the things we're doing safe, even though the compiler doesn't think they're safe? So can someone tell me one thing they think should be an error here? Yeah. Okay, so we'll start with this. Why not push 4? So what's the problem? So Z is the owner. So Z is borrowing Y to get Y0, since that's part of Y, we need to borrow Y. And Z is not done borrowing until we last use Z. So that means that this Y push Y, 4, is invalid. And this could, so, and if this push operation reallocates the space for Y, this could actually be a use after free book. Because then Z, the original Y is freed, and then it's moved to somewhere, and then it's copied to somewhere else, and to have more room, that would be a use after free book. So this is preventing a potential use after free book here. And one of the nasty ones, because this would be in C++ or C, this would be something that usually works. Because usually reallocating the array wouldn't actually need more space. So can someone find me another thing that looks broken, that looks like it should be an error here? Yeah. X isn't mutable. Yes, that is a that is a bug. And that causes a whole bunch of the better statements to be errors. Okay. Other things that are errors. Yeah. X.push, okay. So what's our problem with X.push? Okay, so Y borrows X, and it borrows X until our last use of Y. And it's less obvious whether that could actually be a use after free bug. Because, if we think of like a quote unquote standard dynamic array, where if the way our vec is implemented is something like a struct with a size and a pointer to the data, well, then the data for Y wouldn't move, and this would, in the equivalent C code, be safe, but would not be safe in the equivalent REST code if that were how the vector was implemented. So this is an example where it's possible that REST rules are too conservative for what's actually safe given how the vector ArrayList equivalent works. Questions? Yeah. Okay. And so here, this is an error. And this is an error here because X is used while it's being borrowed mutably. So which of these things would fix that? These changes should fix the problem. So I'll give people a little bit of time to look over our options. Would like some more time? So we have our three options. One is to say that this print to len should use star p. Another is to say we should make p mutable and get a new pointer to x, new reference, sorry, to x after the print to len. And another is to say that we should invert and mute here. And I'll do show of hands for each of the options. If it's possible, multiple of these would fix the problem. Okay, so let's start with A. Who thinks the change in for A, which is just I'm going to make that star P instead of X, who thinks that solves the problem? Makes not an error. Who thinks that does not solve the problem? Okay, so that would be a solution to the problem. It would make this have the same effect in compile. It's probably a bunch less intuitive. Works. Okay, how about B? So for B, our proposal is that I'm going to insert here P equals at mute x, and I'm also going to put a mute here, so the reference is something we can change where that reference. So who thinks this would solve the problem? Thinks this would not solve the problem? Okay, so I believe this should work. What are people concerned about being an issue with this not solving our problem? I guess I believe it should work. Note that this means that the compiler kind of needs to look at each assignment to the reference separately, which is, some extra stuff we didn't explicitly state the compiler was doing. So we can have multiple borrowings of the same object that have to be identified by when it starts and when it ends, not by, it's the borrowing for P. So I believe this works. But sort of compiler might borrow object multiple times for multiple assignments. Which is indeed extra bookkeeping the compiler's now doing for us. That seems kind of annoying. And how about C, taking a non-mutable reference rather than a mutable one? So let's show what that would look like. That's just doing crossing out that. Who thinks that would solve the problem? Would not solve the problem? Okay. Yes, that would get rid of our immediate compile error, but make these into compile errors. And I alluded to the notion of, we've talked a bunch about, the compiler's tracking lifetimes. And in some cases, this is maybe more tricky than what we've shown. So, for example, we have a case like here, where the compiler's bookkeeping for lifetimes is like there's two possible things going on, and it needs to consolidate them. And I have a case here where, assigning to R should be fine because R is not used at the time when Y needs to go away. But assigning to Q is bad because Y goes away. We can't give it back after we're done borrowing with this assignment. Right? You want to borrow it from here to here. but the thing we're borrowing from is only available, or sorry, not from here to here. We want to borrow it from, if that assignment goes through, we want to borrow it from here to here, but the thing we're borrowing is only available from here to here, so that's a problem. So that's kind of a weird situation the class has to deal with. There's a kind of a more annoying case to deal with where we have like choices with different lifetimes we need to consider, which is like when we have a function here. And Rust wants it to be the case that we can use functions without reading their code. So we just have the declaration of the function without its, you know, code known to us. And the question is, is this assignment to Q legal? And there's a problem here that we need to know, well, you know, is this Q going to be something based on Y? In which case, we shouldn't allow that, because we can't keep Q around, we can't unborrow it after we're done. Or is it something based on the original value of Q, in which case that's fine, right? That's still going to be around long enough because we already checked that it was safe to borrow earlier. So this situation is going to need a solution that involves more work from us, the programmer. This situation, this is something which explains why the compiler is doing some complicated stuff, because we need to worry about what if the if statement does execute versus doesn't. We need to make sure we handle both cases. But that's just extra work for the compiler writer. Here, if we have mystery defined in a separate file that's being compiled separately, that's not going to work, so we're going to solve this problem by asking the programmer of mystery to do extra work. So we have to have rules for how long things live around. And, you know, we have some simple rules, like, you know, when the reference is around, we have to have references being as active. And we have that kind of implicit knowing in the last use. The object it comes from needs to be in existence. We need to be able to start borrowing it and finish borrowing it safely. We have to have rules for function calls. And one is for arguments. And we need to have the arguments be provably something we can borrow for the entire function call. That's probably pretty straightforward. And we have to deal with functions that return references, and they have to have lifetimes, and we have to know what their lifetimes are. And we also have to worry about references that are stored in structs, and so those need to have lifetimes, and we need to prove that those lifetimes are longer than the structs. So we can't make a reference to a struct that lives longer than something in the struct. If we have a struct with a reference in it, which is a thing we can do, you know, just like you have structs with pointers in them. So let's talk about functions and lifetimes. So in lots of cases, this is kind of invisible to the programmer. So here, we actually need to know how long does this return value live. And implicitly, the compiler says, I'm going to assume, because we have one argument that's a reference, that the return value is based on that original reference and has the same lifetime. So this just works without us doing anything special. And the compiler is going to assume that the string that's returned has the same lifetime as the values we pass in. And it's going to assume this even if all it sees is a declaration of this function. It doesn't actually know about the implementation. But then we get problems where there's a real choice here. So here I get a vector of strings and a string in a different format. We won't talk about str versus string. We can look that up if you need to do string programming in Rust. It is one of the uglier parts of the language. But these are two references, and there's a question. What is this string's lifetime? Is it the same as our prefix, or is it the same as our values? And this is a real problem because a likely call to this function might look something like this. And in that case, if we think of how long are these objects valid, this is valid forever because it's a constant. So its lifetime is that static one. It's valid forever because it's just a constant in the program. And this is going out of scope soon. And I could have written a function that returns things that legitimately have either of those two lifetimes, depending on which argument I use to produce my return value. Now, we as humans know it's probably based on this. But that's not something the compiler can figure out, especially when it doesn't have the body of the function. So Rust has this syntax where we can annotate our parameters, our references, with explicit lifetimes. So here I'm saying that this function takes a string with lifetime A and a values array with lifetime B, and it returns a string with the same lifetime as the values vector. And why would it be the same lifetime? Well, because we got it literally from the vector. It's actually a part of it that we're returning. And really a pointer to a part of it in turn. So questions? Yes, yeah.
Does that mean whatever you're returning has to always have the same lifetime as one of the arguments?
Question, does that mean whatever you're returning always has the same lifetime as one of the arguments? Not necessarily, because you can do something like, something, and like, I can write this function that returns something with a static lifetime, even though it takes an argument which isn't. Pretty trivial. So, but probably the only useful lifetimes you're going to get are that forever lifetime or something based on one of the arguments. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Do we need to annotate functions? So in this case, if I write it without the annotation, it's an error because the compiler doesn't know what I mean. And even though the compiler could figure it out from the code, in this case, there's a rule that the prototype needs to kind of stand alone. Does that answer your question? Okay, other things? And so that shows we can have, this used in our some other function. And that makes this safe work, for example, because if we didn't infer the correct lifetime here, we wouldn't know that this return value is actually has the same lifetime as values. It would be an error if it was actually based on the prefix we just computed, and now that goes away when the function returns. And this is an example of this lifetime kind of correctly verifying that we don't have a dangling pointer in this case. And we needed the annotations to know that because we can write a function that has this prototype that does have, you know, a dangling pointer in this case. Okay, so that's on our lifetime annotations. And the other thing I mentioned that we've kind of alluded to is that we can allow multiple readers, but we only have one writer at a time, one writer using an object. So this means, for example, if I try to have two mutable borrowings of the object, this is an error. And this is an example of where it's an error where we can actually, in this case, this is kind of a false positive. Because this scenario should actually be completely safe. Now, in this case, should be completely safe, but the compiler is going to complain, hey, you borrowed the object to read, and then tried to borrow it to write, but when someone's writing it, modifying it, I should say, not just writing, modifying the object, you aren't allowed to also be reading it somewhere else. So the compiler says, this isn't allowed. Right here, you wanted to read it. And while you were still reading it, because you haven't finished using that reference, you tried to write it. That's bad. Now, we probably know in this case that it's, if this were C code, it would actually be perfectly safe because that pointer is going to point to the exact same place it used to point to, and we're just going to increment the value that's stored there. We're not moving anything around. But again, REST rules are a bit conservative because we don't try to guess what's going on with whether the vector moves around when we're modifying it. So this isn't allowed. And we can think of why this isn't allowed. If we think of that notion I just showed you, that we want to kind of have this be independent of different functions. Because if I just replace that add one function with append one, all of a sudden we have to worry about our pointer to the first element moving if the vector gets reallocated. And that's why the general rule is just that we don't allow a read while we're writing. Questions? And it's the exact same error because, again, we're not figuring this out based on what actually happens to the vector, just based on our rules about one writer at a time, one writer and no readers. And I mentioned that the compiler kind of figures out that we're not using a reference afterwards, so this is safe. Even though I have two mutable borrowings, because the compiler realizes, well, first element really goes away before we do the other add one operation. But if I do it in the other order, the compiler says, well, that doesn't make sense. You were in the middle of modifying it when you tried to call add one and modify it again. Can't modify it twice at the same time. And this also applies to modifying it just directly. Right. So in this case, I'm not borrowing it by making another mutable reference. I'm borrowing it to just modify it directly, but that still counts as a borrowing that can't overlap. We can't do two writes at once. Questions? Okay, so that's where we'll finish today. I guess I'll mention, just finish up, another example where this comes up is that if I'm iterating over a vector, I can't modify it. And I'm mentioning this because this is a common bug pattern in languages like C++ or Java, is that you modify something you're iterating over. And this rule prohibits that. Um, So next time we'll talk about what we can do, sort of the mechanisms Rust provides that are mostly copied from C++, if we want to support things that this borrowing doesn't let us do. And still be kind of safe.